White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
Well, boys and girls, here we go again. This is Wotan's day. Yeah, Wotan. We need a Wotan running around here. I haven't seen a Wotan for quite a while. Terrible Tommy here in the bunker right here in Warsaw, Indiana, north central Indiana, on a beautiful, absolutely fabulous day. I've been out in the hinterlands trimming trees and everything already this morning. It's beautiful weather here. Yeah. Hasn't rained for at least 24 hours. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And the date is the 29th of June, 2016. And if you got a big plan, if you're all set to go, you got all your equipment, you got your weapons of mass destruction all fired up and gassed up. Well, you've only got a day or two here to get it done. I'll bet some of this shit drives the feds crazy. Yeah, we like to fun around a little bit. Sit there over there at Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station. Sit there, drink a few beers, and come up with stories and myths and all kinds of stuff about what would you like to do. Well, I'd like to do this. Well, are you going to do it right away? No, I think I'll wait a while. Well, yesterday they had quite a bit of fun over there in the British government, and the man who sort of spearheaded this get out of EU gave a talk to the assembled people over there. I'm going to play it for you, and then I'm going to comment. So let's see if I can get it up here. Just a minute.
You know, when I came here 17 years ago and I said that I wanted to lead a campaign to get Britain to leave the European Union, you all laughed at me. Well, I have to say, you're not laughing now, are you? And the reason you're so upset, the reason you're so angry, has been perfectly clear from all the angry exchanges this morning. You, as a political project, are in denial. You're in denial that your currency is failing. You're in denial. Well, just look at the Mediterranean. No. As a policy to impose poverty on Greece and the rest of the Mediterranean, you've done very well. And you're in denial over Mrs. Merkel's call last year for as many people as possible to cross the Mediterranean into the European Union has led to massive divisions between countries and within countries. But the biggest problem you've got, and the reason, the main reason the United Kingdom voted the way that it did, is you have, by stealth, by deception, without ever telling the truth to the British or the rest of the peoples of Europe, you have imposed upon them a political union. You've imposed upon them a political union. And when the people in 2005 in the Netherlands and France voted against that political union, when they rejected the constitution, you simply ignored them and brought the Lisbon Treaty in through the back door. What happened? What happened last Thursday was a remarkable result. It was indeed a seismic result, not just for British politics, for European politics, but perhaps even for global politics too, because what the little people did, what the ordinary people did, what the people who have been oppressed over the last few years and seen their living standards go down, they rejected the multinationals, they rejected the merchant banks, they rejected big politics, and they said, actually, we want our country back. We want our fishing waters back. We want our borders back. We want to be an independent, self-governing, normal nation. And that is what we have done, and that is what must happen. And in doing so, we now offer a beacon of hope to Democrats across the rest of the European continent. I'll make one prediction this morning. The United Kingdom will not be the last member state to leave the European Union. So the question is, what do we do next? Now, it is up to the British government to invoke Article 50. And I have to say that I don't think we should spend too long in doing it. I totally agree, Mr. Juncker, that the British people have voted. We need to make sure that it happens. But what I would like to see is a grown-up and sensible attitude to how we negotiate a different relationship. Now I know that virtually none of you have ever done a proper job in your lives or worked in business or worked in trade or indeed ever created a job. But listen. Just listen.
Herr Farage, Augenblick.
Just a second.
Liebe Kolleginnen und Kollegen,
ladies and gentlemen, I do understand that you're getting emotional, but you're acting like UKIP normally acts in this chamber, so please, don't imitate them. Mr. Farage, however, I would say one thing to you. The fact that you're claiming nobody has done a decent job in their life, you can't really say that. I'm sorry.
No, you're quite right, Mr. Schulz. UKIP used to protest against the establishment, and now the establishment protests against UKIP. So something has happened here. Let us listen to some simple, pragmatic economics. Between your countries and my country, we do an enormous amount of business in goods and services. That trade is mutually beneficial to both of us. That trade matters. If you were to decide to cut off your noses, to spite your faces, and to reject any idea of a sensible trade deal, the consequences would be far worse for you than it would be for us. Even no deal is better for the United Kingdom than the current rotten deal that we've got. But if we were to move to a position where tariffs were reintroduced on products like motor cars, then hundreds of thousands of German workers would risk losing their jobs. So why don't we just be pragmatic, sensible, grown up, realistic, and let's cut between us a sensible tariff-free deal and thereafter recognise that the United Kingdom will be your friend, that we will trade with you, we will cooperate with you, we will be your best friends in the world. But do that, do it sensibly, and allow us to go off and pursue our global ambitions and future. Thank you.
Sounds pretty good, huh? Well, if you've been in politics and this struggle as long as I've been, you know to watch out for the other shoe to drop. Believe me, the powers that be in the ruling class are not going to take it laying down, and they got a million ways to employ their wrath. The only way to stop that is to drag them out of their white sepulcher banks into the street and make examples out of them. But you're going to see another couple of shoes drop on this thing. And I can't tell you exactly how it's going to work out, but I can tell you that the second in command of this fellow that spoke was on radio this morning being interviewed by Glenn Pecker. And he was not talking like Trump, that's for sure. He was talking about, well, you know, the main thing we want is free trade, you know. Free trade. That's what we've got now all over Asia with the United States, and all the jobs are gone and the factories are closed down because of free trade. He spent most of his time talking about free trade. And we don't want to offend anybody. And, you know, there's nothing about race. Maybe a little bit of inference, but not much. So I'm going to tell you, man, we're on our own. And there's no knight on shining with armor, shining armor on a big white horse is going to ride in here to save us, because the only thing that will save us is if the rank and file get more than angry, get physical. You ought to learn that even from the blacks. What the hell? After they burned down Watts and they burned down part of Detroit and part of New Jersey, Newark, and part of Washington, D.C., things started working out for at least part of the blacks. A percentage of blacks started getting it their way. And especially after they burnt down all those stores in Washington, D.C. that were owned by the Jews, which a lot of people don't talk about now, but I remember it well. And also when the Hanafi Muslims invaded the Anti-Defamation League headquarters of B'nai B'rith there in Washington, D.C., and were threatening to cut all the heads off the Jews and throw them out the window. That got their attention, too. I don't know how you want to figure it, but probably fortunately they didn't do it, because it may have been too much of an overreaction. However, I remember at the time, this was in the 70s, David Duke called me. At that time, I was still working with David Duke, and he was in panic-stricken how horrible this was and how terrible it was. And, he was really worried about it. They're going to react against us and come after us, not the blacks, but the feds. I said, relax, Dave. If they cut all their heads off, big deal. It's just the price of a collateral damage and waging war. He was aghast. I used to do things like that to Duke, and he would get all shook up. Tom, you can't say that. Don't say things like that. Don't say that. Well, Mr. Duke, I'm just being honest about it. You don't want me to mince words, do you? Well, yeah, like I do. It's interesting that Glenn Pecker was on there, and he was talking about ISIS and what ISIS had planned, and they're allegedly changing their tactics, supposedly to find clusters of white people and attack white people, because then they won't be accused of being racist. And that supposedly appeared in the ISIS magazine, wherever that's at. I've never seen one. So I'll see if I can play a little of that clip on here, too. Actually, that's pretty smart of ISIS, to be perfectly honest about it. That way they can propagandize and get more non-whites on their side. And, of course, the conservatives are going on and on about how ISIS just keeps winning and tore up the whole place and that's it. And we're not winning against them and not winning against them and going on and on and on. Well, my position is very simple. If you really want to take care of ISIS, number one, deny them weapons. Most of their weapons they're getting from the United States and Europe and even Israel through the back door. So, first of all, you put a world embargo on weapons getting into the hands of ISIS. They'll run out of these weapons. They're taking off other dead bodies sooner or later. And then you simply divide them and isolate them and then lay back and let them starve to death. Now, you're going to say, well, yeah, but they got all of these other people that they're holding hostage. Well, I'm sorry. That collateral damage can't be helped if you're going to defeat them. U.S. military is no problem. Just encircle them, minimize them as much as possible, and then just isolate them and wait. Otherwise, you'll never defeat them. Or they may change their name and they may gravitate into another operation of equal danger, but it'll be the same old thing. But that's not what the military-industrial complex wants. You see, that's your problem. The military-industrial complex makes lots of mucho money off the weapons. And until like Obama goes up to the military-industrial complex companies in this country and says, we're going to shut you down because you're shipping, you're getting weapons into ISIS and these people, or for that matter, anybody that's causing trouble. But you're not going to do that because these weapons factories in the United States are making lots of money. They're employing lots of good white Christian people, and they're going to keep it up. So there's relatively easy answers to all this, but they're not going to do it because it's bad for business. And like I say all the time, follow the money. You want to know how ISIS is doing, follow the money. Now, ISIS can morph into about anything they want, and they're being very intelligent about what they're doing. They're going lone wolf or small cells and so forth, and reverting to a real guerrilla force. And that's very, very difficult to fight. And, of course, most of the people they're fighting against are limp-wristedly fighting them anyhow. Most of these so-called people that are, they're being paid big money to fight ISIS. And the minute things go wrong, they run out the door. Now, if they leave Assad go and let him really kick ass, he could probably take care of most of the problem himself. But they're not going to do that because half of Washington wants to get rid of Assad and half of them want to kill him. So, anyhow, that's the situation there. Let me see if I can find this clip.
They start calling you racist. Having lost this referendum, the losing side is now trying to pretend that it was all about xenophobia, it was all about bigotry. But the opposite was the truth. I was on the streets campaigning since December. And not only was I campaigning alongside many Brits of Commonwealth backgrounds, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Indian, West Indian people campaigning for self-government and out of patriotism and out of love for the country, but actually we were joined by a surprising number of people who had taken UK citizenship having come from continental European backgrounds, people from Polish, Hungarian, French, Spanish, Italian backgrounds, because they had clocked the EU for the undemocratic, oligarchic racket that it is. And they understood that voting to take back your laws does not mean voting to walk away from Europe or voting to close your borders. We're still going to have immigration into the UK. We're a growing economy, you know, and no one has ever suggested that we can have zero immigration. All that's going to change is that from now on, we will determine who comes in and in what numbers.
And do you see the others starting to leave the European Union? Are you going to stand alone for a while, or do you see dominoes begin to fall?
I think that the United Kingdom will probably secure a relationship that is based on free trade rather than political integration. And I think a number of other countries will want something similar, and they will include some countries that are in Europe but outside the EU. I think that the Swiss, the Icelanders, and others might want to, as it were, team up with us. And I think there will be some of the more peripheral Atlanticist free trading countries like Denmark, maybe the Netherlands, that want to have a similar deal as well. And potentially that leaves everybody happier. It means that the core federal integration-minded EU countries can go ahead and have their political union, their common currency, their single foreign policy, their president, and all the rest of it, and good luck to them. And then around that will be a tier of countries with a much looser deal, where we have open markets, where we remain friends, where we talk regularly, but where we have the right to pass our own laws without being overruled by a foreign court. Now, doesn't that make have here. You know, the core countries get what they want, which is a United States of Europe, and the more reluctant countries get what they thought they were coming for, which is a free market, not a political union.
Daniel Hannan, a member of the European Parliament, while it lasts, or while his job lasts there. Thanks so much, Daniel.
Thank you so much.
Well, did you hear him talking about more white people or cutting down on people coming into Britain? I didn't hear much of that, did you? Did he say anything about white people? He didn't say anything about white people, did he? He talked a lot about trade and economy, and we're not going to cut down on immigration because we need wage slaves. And he didn't talk about Asia either, you notice that. Now, I know the main thing they were interested in was the EU and the British situation, but still, he did not mention the Asians, except we're going to continue to bring in Pakistanis and all those kind of people, and Indians and so forth. So, what are you gaining here, Mr. White Man? I don't see you're gaining a goddamn thing until somebody starts saying the right things. Oh, yeah, I forgot one thing, too, that with his arms steel, with all these arms making and manufacturers around the United States, which most of you don't have any idea where they're at. They could be right next door to your house. But the NRA is very strong and powerful. Not so much because they have a lot of members, which they do. A lot of subscribers. But the NRA, of course, works with the government on military arms, too. To what extent, I'm not sure at this time, but I know they do. So that's another reason why they get a lot of protection from these congressmen and senators, and not just because the congressmen and senators want to go out and shoot rabbits. Oh, yeah, it's all tied together, boys and girls. And that's why I never joined the patriotic NRA. Now, here is a little excerpt from Glenn Pecker. I just happened to be working around the house and I was listening to a little bit of it. But this is how stupid he is about Germany and how most people are about Germany in World War II. You know, trying to make it like that the German people are totally in subjugation to the Nazi Party. Yeah, listen to this.
Understand what the problem is. You can't deal with it. We could not have won World War II if we refused to talk about the Nazis. We would have. See, this is how it doesn't make sense at all. By saying that we're racist, by saying Islamic extremism, is the same as saying you are a racist against all Germans by saying you're going after the Nazis. It's the exact opposite. No, we're going after this ideology and people who believe in the Nazi ideology. We're not going after all Germans. We didn't have a problem with all Germans. We had a problem with those who were Nazis. I have the civilian order. It's called Civilian Order Number 1. And it was the civilian order that Dwight Eisenhower put out. And it was a broadside that they would paper, you know, telephone poles and sites of buildings and everything else. And it's in English and in German. And what it says is, we are the Army of the United States of America. And the German people are not our enemies. The Nazis are. If you were a Nazi, turn yourself in. You are our enemy. If you are harboring a Nazi, you are our enemy. Turn them in. But if you are just a German, we are here to liberate you. That's the same thing. We couldn't have won World War II without saying it's the Nazi we're going after, not the Germans. Otherwise, we wouldn't have stopped fighting. We would have killed all the Germans. We didn't. Do we have a problem with Germany now? Do we have a problem with Germans now? No. No.
Well, that's only because they look like you.
No, they really don't. They don't.
It would be like these people yelling Zig Heil, too, as this guy was saying, a la Akbar. It'd be like a Nazi saying Zig Heil, and you'd be, well, I'm not sure what he meant by that.
What's amazing, and this will happen, the Black Tom explosion back in 1914, I think it was. It was on
the
yeah, that's supposed to know why you like Tom Harrison.
We wouldn't know about it.
And why, I mean, you're talking down to the audience. Obviously, they've all been talking about the Black Tom explosion from
1919. I didn't catch that. It was under which president was it?
It was under President Roosevelt.
I thought it was
Roosevelt.
Did you say Roosevelt?
No.
That sounded like
someplace in between Washington and Roosevelt. Something happened.
And my guess is it was. Was it between Washington and Roosevelt? I think
it was. It actually was. But that was good.
It was the Roosevelt period of American history.
Roosevelt. Of course, that famous Roosevelt period where Woodrow Wilson was promising people that he wasn't going to get into the war, and the German saboteurs, blew up an ammunition site right on the other side of the Statue of Liberty. It was so powerful that it actually, people were shook awake as far as Baltimore.
It broke windows in Boise, Idaho.
Did not know.
Yeah.
But it broke windows all the way from Battery Park in Manhattan all the way to 42nd Street, which is half the island of
almost
Manhattan.
Idaho.
Yeah, almost Very Idaho. Yeah. But anyway, it was huge. He buried it. And what did he say? He said, because he didn't want to fight the Germans, he didn't want to get into World War One because he was promising the people he wouldn't, and he didn't want to take it on. And so he said, that's capitalism for you. There's these evil capitalists that just are trying to blow things up. And they just don't care. They were so shoddy on their security, and they just didn't care, and they weren't maintaining the place, and all of a sudden it blew up spontaneously. And what happened? To put the Japanese in the internment camps, they reopened the investigation that they already knew and had proof were Germans. They knew who the guy was back under Woodrow Wilson. They knew the whole ring. They knew all of it. But they buried that and suppressed it until they wanted to use that for World War II and to get the Japanese into internment camps. And that kind of stuff is going to happen. They're burying all of this.
Well, at that point, I had to turn off that moron. His idea of the Germans and the National Socialist Party are ridiculous. The German people were 99% supportive of the National Socialist Party. But the way he talked about it, it'd be like if Russia would have wanted to attack the United States and said, we're only attacking the Democrats. We're not mad at the Republicans or anybody else, just the Democrats. That's what pisses me off about when they talk about it's always the Nazis. You know, they don't always, when they talk about history, they don't talk about the Shintoist and the Japanese ruling party and like that. Today, they're Japanese. But when they talk about all of history, they talk about Nazi Germany. Nazis did this, Nazis did that. Nobody else did anything. Well, since the National Socialists only composed about 10, 15, 20% of the German population, they surely couldn't have done it by themselves. So when Glenn Pecker talks like this, what we should always do is demand when they talk about historical Germany, especially during World War II, we should always use German, not National Socialists. Because they've been able to get out from under that label in Germany by kissing the asses of the United States and England after the war. And also a bunch of co-conspirator Germans, industrialists and high-ranking people in the government were able to slide and slide right into NATO and everything else, which, of course, and then there's the other police force, Interpol, which was created right out of the right out of the SS. In fact, they had a lot of the leaders in the SS that took over in Interpol. So whenever you see something where they say the Nazis did this and the Nazis did that, you should change it to Germans. The Germans did this and the Germans did that, because there is no way the National Socialist Party could have done anything without the pretty much total support of the German population. And for them to say, we don't hate you, and then you look at Germany after the war that was totally bombed to smithereens, almost as bad as an atomic bomb blast, and millions of civilians were killed and starved, and then try to tell me that Eisenhower didn't hate them. Eisenhower did hate them. And he hated the veterans, too, of World War II. And that's the part, that's another story. But I forget the name of the book that exposes that. So anyhow, these guys are on the radio. They've got these big-time radio shows putting out all this bullshit. I say they deserve whatever ISIS has got in store for them. You know, I don't know if I've still got that clip. I thought I recorded it where they said that the ISIS was going to start going after big amounts of white people. I mentioned earlier, and that's to go after big amounts of white people when they do something. Well, you never know. That might have an effect that might be interesting. Maybe that's what's needed. I don't know. Oh, Metzger, you're crazy. Well, I just know the way the real world runs, that's all. And I talk about it. Incidentally, I got a new sign out in front of my house that says, Hillary is Bill's pimp. Hillary is Bill's pimp. I got quite a few horns honking for that sign already today.
I'm starting to think this is actually part of a social experiment. People are not paying attention or just watching Dancing with the Stars and football and don't care. Maybe that's what it is. You guys remember after the San Bernardino shooting when they let every reporter from every mainstream media outlet ever ransack the open crime scene of the suspected shooter's apartment? We'll take a listen to this.
The apartment of Omar Mateen. What happened here today?
I think the word would be strategic complicity, because what happened today, at 11 o'clock last night, the apartment became open for the police and, in conjunction, the FBI to come investigate. As they left, the FBI did not secure the facility. They did not lock the doors. They did not close the windows. Media was walking in and out of Omar Martin's apartment, willy-nilly, just collecting whatever they wanted to collect.
That's right. They left the door open. The FBI just so happened to, oopsie, accidentally leave the door open. Front and back, patio and front door. So less than 24 hours after the shooting, a day, already you had press taking casual tours and walking all over Omar Mateen's apartment. Because that's just how they roll, right? When there's a crime scene for a crime of this magnitude, it's supposed to be the worst terror attack on American soil since 9/11, that's what we're told. Now they're letting this reporter just casually tour Omar Mateen's apartment, which he explains has been ransacked by the police. And he's just going to walk around, he's going to allow multiple different media outlets to just stroll on through, looking at things and touching stuff. 24 hours.
They were asking, is this a crime scene? No yellow tape, nothing signifying this is an active crime scene of the man who just committed the largest mass shooting.
No FBI agent there guarding the apartment.
No guard.
No lock on the door. No yellow tape that says police crime scene, stay away.
They're tweeting pictures of the killer's bathroom. I mean, this is the kind of... Is this the Geraldo show? I mean... So he's just walking around, we're just going to take the casual tour. The first outlet to do this was actually the Daily Mail. And if you look at the timestamp on when this was published, according to this, it was 1:26 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, June 13th. It's pretty clear just looking at the footage that all their stuff is still there. I mean, I've interviewed people that have had SWAT teams go into their house for much, much lesser crimes. And their stuff is all dumped out on the floor everywhere. They take stuff. There's things missing. They impound things for evidence. All kinds of stuff happens, okay? This is... What? Oh, he's getting out something. What is this? Mateen's expired firearm carry. What is this? Just sitting out on the counter, just like that, his expired firearm license, right there, just waiting for the press that's touring his apartment. Good night, we're done. I don't even know what else to say. That's... So, you're telling me that not even 24 hours after what is one of the worst mass shootings in American history... And they're already just letting the press go right in because they forgot to lock the door. That's what we're supposed to believe? That fridge looks way staged. Wow. Oh, and books and documents related to Islam, of course, right next to the expired firearm carry license. Oh, gosh. They have a picture of him holding the gun out in the backyard, too. Because I'm waiting for it. So staged, it's so over the top, it so defies all logic and reason. It can't be that everyone is just this incompetent. It really can't.
You couldn't get within 100 yards of that apartment yesterday. Nobody was getting around. They had pulled everybody out of the apartment buildings. They had them sequestered.
I feel like we're in one of those really bad made-for-TV movies on Lifetime Network or something. They're doing it on purpose now. It's over the top. It's too much.
Seems a little suspicious, doesn't it? Mateen's apartment, it's like nobody's been in it. I mean, it's not trashed like some of my rooms were when the ATF came in here. Everything's in its place. Press are walking in and out. Looking at everything, the Islamic magazines right next to the expired firearms certificate. Seems a little strange to me, doesn't it, to you? Do we have some kind of a setup going on here? Is the FBI that incompetent? Well, they must be. No yellow tape, nothing to protect the crime scene, nothing at all. Well, you can't make this stuff up, folks. Here you go again. Let me see here. New research and polls from the Pew Center finds that nearly 9 in 10 American black people, Negroes, 88% to be exact, say that white Americans need to give more and do more to improve living conditions and race relations for the Negroes. A huge 88% of the blacks believe more change is needed before they have equal rights with whites, of which they're incapable of having. And about half, 43%, don't believe racism will end. Well, that's true, as long as you're here. According to a sweeping new survey by Pew Research Center of Race in America, In a three-month survey, 3,769 adults and 1,799 whites, 1,004 blacks and 654 Hispanics, Pew found that whites and blacks have starkly different views on race and race relations. Surprise, surprise. For example, many more blacks than whites believe the country has to provide more fairness to them. From the survey, an overwhelming majority of Negroes, 88%, say the country needs to continue making changes for blacks to have equal rights with whites, which they'll never have. But 43% are skeptical that such changes will ever occur, and they're right. A much lower share of whites, 53%, say the country still has work to do for blacks to achieve equal rights with whites, and only 11% express doubt that these changes will come. 53%? Jeez. They're almost as stupid as the blacks. Blacks and whites also disagree on how blacks are treated in America, from Pew. A large margins, by large margins, Negroes are more likely than whites to say black people are treated less fairly in the workplace, a difference of 42 percent points. When applying for a loan or a mortgage, 41 points, in dealing with the police, 34 points, in the courts, 32 points, in stores and restaurants, 28 points, and when voting in elections, 23 points. By a margin of at least 20% percentage points, blacks are also more likely than whites to say racial discrimination, 70% versus 36%, lower quality schools, 75% versus 53%, and lack of jobs, 66% versus 45%. Our major regions that black have it's harder for them to get ahead. They also don't agree on President Obama's impact on fixing race relations either, with 51% of the blacks believing he has helped, while just 28% of whites agree. Wow. Yeah, I guess that's it for that article. So as long as blacks exist in the United States, North America, wherever they're at, as long as they're there, they're not going to be equal. It's impossible for them to be equal. It's even impossible for white people to be equal, but it's easier for them than the blacks, that's for sure. Well, Black Lives Matters are claiming that secret history, famous Jack Daniel's whiskey, was invented by a black slave. Now it's official. The brand agreed to pay tribute to the black inventor, and we have one more reason to be proud of our community. I would like to see that researched, and quite possibly they've just given him some money to buy him off. But I question all of these kinds of things. It's possible. But just because somebody just figured a way to make a certain kind of whiskey, the same kind of whiskey had been made all over the South for ages and all over Europe, and develop a brand and so forth, just because one guy dreamed up one bottle of whiskey, that doesn't make him a great person. Makes him a drunken black person. Black Lives Matters failed to say the tremendous amount of death and destruction that liquor has brought to the black race. So you would think that Black Lives Matter would not be so anxious to make this fellow who supposedly came up with Jack Daniel's whiskey a great person. In fact, he should be branded as a war criminal or a race criminal to the black race. So every time you see a black or even a white person laying in an alley with a bottle of Jack Daniels in it, tightly in his grip, you can thank the heroes of the black race. Well, I see the black KKK is active in Las Vegas, or at least Henderson, which is near Las Vegas. Two shot in front of Henderson restaurant, at least one in extremely critical condition. How about that? How about that? Well, Chicago's getting so damn bad that the blacks can't even stand it. Yeah. The Chicago area lost more than 35,000 black residents between 2014 and 2015, according to new data. Yeah. Wait a minute. What's going on here? Got a problem here. Everything's going to crap. Whoops. This machine sometimes causes me problems. Chicago area lost more than 35,000 black residents. This stands as the largest black exodus of any metropolitan area in the country, according to analysis from the Chicago Tribune. This loss of black residents led the Chicago Metropolitan Statistical Area, which includes the city and suburbs, stretching into Wisconsin and Indiana. Whoa, great, they're moving out of Indiana too, to its first population loss in more than two decades. Of course, the way they have babies, I doubt whether that's going to make much difference. What's causing black families to pack up and ship out? A search for safety and success are likely suspects. Safety, from each other. And I'll bet you most of them move to another city and they'll move right into the black areas and be right back where they started. Black futures look bleak in Chicago. Chicago youth of color are suffering from an unparalleled drought of economic opportunity compared with peer cities, the state of Illinois and the nation as a whole, according to a January 2016 report titled, quote, Lost, the Crisis of Jobless and Out-of-School Teens and Young Adults in Chicago, Illinois, and the U.S. Oh, they're looking for jobs real hard. No, they're looking for a way to get money. And prepared for alternative schools network by researchers at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Nearly half of Chicago's young black men, ages 20 to 24, are out of school and out of work and in prison. A rate four times higher than that for white Chicago men of the same age. Well, it's obviously discrimination. It's terrible. And far higher than the same groups in New York City and Los Angeles. But joblessness doesn't exist in a vacuum. Those struggling to gain access to economic opportunities in Chicago also play a part in the city's epidemic of violent crime. In nearly every decade between 1991 and 2011, nearly every year between 1991 and 2011, a majority of convicted murderers in Chicago were between the ages of 17 and 25, according to city crime data, and they were black. They were also more likely to fall victim to murder by other black people than people of any other age group. But research shows access to job opportunities reduces violence among disadvantaged Chicago youth. University of Pennsylvania criminologist Sarah Heller found that in Chicago, a mere summer stint at a minimum wage job resulted in four fewer violent crime arrests per 100 youth over 16 months. Well, you just chain them to the machine. Just keep them in the job all the time. Work their asses off making hamburgers. It's unsurprising, then, that jobs numbers look even worse in communities plagued with violent crime. In eight Chicago neighborhoods on the city's south and west sides, East Garfield Park, North Lawndale, Oakland, Fuller Park, Washington Park, and Englewood, West Englewood, and Pullman, more than two-thirds of people ages 20 to 24 are jobless, and they are black, and they're not looking for a job, they're looking for a hit. So who's to blame? Well, of course, white people. Those white people are always to blame. The city's public schools certainly deserve scrutiny, but even if black Chicagoans had access to better educational opportunities, it's a stretch to think good jobs in their communities would simply appear en masse. Well, they won't, any more than trying to open up their head and pour information into their addled brains. It ain't going to work. Edu is Latin for from within. Intelligence has to be brought out, not stuffed in. A look at the city's disappearing opportunities for those without college diplomas may provide better insight into the job deserts in parts of the city. For example, industrial jobs once formed the backbone of Chicago's black middle class. Well, you guys all voted for to ship them out of the country. But the city now sits at an all-time low for factory employment. State data showed that nearly half of Chicago's manufacturing jobs have disappeared over the last 15 years. The manufacturing sector in the larger Chicago area within Illinois' borders has fallen on similar hard times. I suppose it doesn't affect white people. Bureau of Labor Statistics data shows Chicago, Naperville, Arlington Heights metro area has fewer manufacturing jobs today than it had at the worst months of the Great Recession. Well, that's about, there's a whole big long article here with all the statistics and everything, but black people are moving out. They have heard that the welfare program in Los Angeles and places like that are much more liberal. So they're getting on their horse and going. They've got a new security program, a new app out that's put out by Safer Web. Safer Web had a primary objective to eliminate this problem by boosting security and ensuring eavesdroppers cannot make sense of your encrypted communications. Technical lead John McBride from Safer Web explains, "Our main objective for creating the app was pretty simple. We wanted to help users protect their identity and internet connection to eliminate the risk of any online banking or personal information being stolen, monitored, or hacked. The company, SafeWeb, seemed to deliver on this objective perfectly. Using their technology, we'll give a private tunnel between you and the internet that's invisible to hackers or any malware, letting you browse the internet anonymously and securely. Literally anyone can use it, and it only takes 5 minutes to set it up." So there you go. Safer Web, it's called. I don't know how much it costs, but you can check on it. Just a minute here. Well, so how can Safer Web give it away? Okay, apparently this promotional tactic is common among big companies with large marketing budgets. For instance, Burger King launched a similar campaign in 2013, giving away 20,000 free Whoppers on Facebook. One user we spoke to said, "I came across Safer Web and decided to give it a go. It's less than a cup of coffee anyways. I noticed the difference right away and couldn't be happier with the results. I've always been anxious about who watches the sites I use and how safe my information really is, and heard countless stories about people having their banking information hacked. This is the perfect solution to eliminate this." So if you want to check it out, go to saferweb.com. Let me know what happens. Oh, here is that little article that I was referring to. Lone wolf jihadist should target white Americans so no one mistakes their terror attacks for hate crimes unrelated to the cause of radical Islam. Al-Qaeda writes in the latest edition of its online magazine, in an article first reported by the Foreign Desk, Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula called for self-directed Muslim terrorists to kill in America. But the article titled Inspired Guide Orlando Operation tells terrorists to avoid targeting places and crowds where non-whites are generally found, because if gays and homosexuals or Latinos appear to be targets, the federal government will be the one taking full responsibility. Well, that's interesting. Wow. What'll they think of next? Well, I see hate crime, so-called reports of hate crime increased 57% following the Brexit vote over there in Britain. Wow. Run for your lives. But then I see right below that police link two hate crime assaults to Brexit. Oh, boy. It's a landslide. Well, that's it for today. Wotan's Day here in the Midwest. And we'll be back with you tomorrow on Thursday for another big, 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 big show.